Welcome to the Duluth Rundown interview portion. This is episode 36, and first, before we get started with our interview with John Carlson, a quick shout out from our sponsor, Austin Jaro. Austin Jaro is Duluth's original running specialty store, and you can find them up in the mall area at 917 West Central Entrance. And go to Austin Jaro for anything that you need running related: shoes, apparel, socks, especially knowledge. Their staff are great to work with. Hope you go check them out. Thank you to Austin Jaro.
All right, well, we are starting the interview portion of the podcast right now, and we are joined with local runner and race director. I'm sure everybody knows his name and knows John. John Carlson has joined us. John, thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's kind of an honor to be asked about talking about my past and my history in the running, because that has been a huge portion of my life for the past almost 50 years.
Well, you know, you are, to me, you are definitely one of the big names of kind of the last, we'll talk about how far back, but, you know, I'm just going to guess 30 years at bare minimum in Duluth, in the Duluth scene, if not probably more. And we'll find out if I'll do my math.
Well, you know, it's been a lot of fun. It's been kind of a nice journey. You know, as we get going, I some of the things I wrote down about how running has changed from back when I first started to where, you know, a lot of it in my mind has changed from those of us that were very serious about it. And not that to say that people aren't serious about it now. It's a more recreational, keeping healthy type of a sport than it was. And, you know, I started back in 1977, basically running a lot of races. Some of the old races that some might remember, the Bridgman's 5 miler that started at Marshall High School. I remember running that one. There was one that the North Shore Striders put out called the Smelt Run that was on Highway 61. And that was a nice 6 miler. I remember after I ran that race, I was in pretty good shape at that point in time. I averaged 5:32 per mile. And one of the running buddies that we used to run with, I call him Coach Joe Kleiman. I ran 5:32 per mile. I was pretty proud of it. And he goes, "Well, that's fine. What are you going to do for me now?" So, you know, Coach was always very forward about saying, you know, "That's great, but now what are you going to do next?" And that's why we called him the coach. You know, I was lucky to run with a lot of runners out of the YMCA. You know, Joe Kleiman, Tom Andrew, rest in peace, Bob Tofty, Bill Haugen, Scotty Harrison. You know, we just ran out of the Y at noon, and then every Saturday we would go for our long runs, which was, you know, anywhere from 10 up to, as we were training for the marathon, up to 20, 22 miles. And Coach never let us slack off at all. And if we tended to get him irritated, he would pick up the pace, so we couldn't talk anymore. I had a lot of fun running with those guys. And, you know, as I kept on getting better and better, progressing, I got a chance to run with some of the better runners. I look at runners as, back then, I call them like four different groups. There's the elites, and then there was level A, level B, and level C. And I always put myself in level B, maybe in the upper end of level B. Those of us that ran about 6 minute miles, those that were faster than that, I put as level A. One gentleman that I used to run with was Kirk Jewell. Some may remember his name. We did a 6 mile training run out of the Y one noon, and we hit the 5 mile mark at 29:05, and I went, "Holy smokes, that's faster than some of the 5 milers that people are doing nowadays." So it was fun to run with those kind of guys. The level A people, I always looked at Jess Koski, Jay Lee, Kevin Peterson. All those guys were the level A people, and Eddie Kleiman. I always tried to catch with these guys, but, you know, it just wasn't there. Whether or not I didn't coach myself well enough, or I just didn't want to push that hard, but it was always fun. You know, Jaro was always one of those guys in level A. Jerry Larson, These are all old names from way, way back when. And we spent a lot of time training on this stuff. I can remember doing my average weekly mileage was around 70 miles per week. And then I got up as high as 110. And when I was really training, so, it was a lot of fun. I would race every weekend, and I always tried to go in kind of incognito as I went to a race. I would come in with big baggy sweatpants and a big baggy sweatshirt and do my little warm-ups before a race. And I tried to find races that not a lot of the level A people would go to. Maybe, was kind of egotistical, I guess. But then as the got closer to the race, I would shed everything, put my Nike Mariahs on and have my short little shorts, and away we fly. So it was a lot of fun. I got, so many chances to meet so many great people. Some of you guys might remember Carl Schurstead down in Grantsburg, Wisconsin, put on a race called the Centre de Mai, which was about a month before Grandma's. And he always liked to promote it as 10 miles either side of a marathon or a 10K, because it was 16.2 miles.
Okay.
And I remember one race when I was in Grantsburg, you know, obviously you do one last trip to the bathroom, and I go into the bathroom and there's Gary Bjorklund. And he's pulling out a box of brand new Balance shoes, and he's going to put them on. I go, that doesn't really make a lot of sense to put on brand new shoes. He goes, oh, they're fit perfectly for my feet, so I don't worry about it. So that was kind of, you know, fun to talk to him. And at that same race, I remember running with Alan Page. You know, yeah. Dick Beardsley was there, but it was always nice to see Alan Page there. It's like, boy, he was big guy, and he kept his running up, for many, many years. And he was always fun to see. I'm sure you guys have seen him on the course at Twin Cities Marathon, you know, playing his tuba. Mm-hmm. And that's always been kind of a thing to see here. And I remember, Carl Schurstead, you know, may he rest in peace. His race always started with a big cannon.
Mm. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. And then I remember one year I ran that race, and I didn't particularly have a good race. And as I was running the race, all of a sudden a deer comes out and hits a runner.
Oh,
they had to have an ambulance come get the runner. And being I was having a poor race, everybody thought, all my crew thought it was me. That got so, you know, that was always kind of fun. I don't know. Maybe I'm just kind of rambling here. If you guys want to ask me some other things, I mean, there's other races that I ran a lot of races around the country. For example, one year, in fact, I posted some pictures on Facebook yesterday. I was one of the supposedly original members of the Northwoods Track Club. That was kind of opposite of the North Shore Striders.
Yeah.
And we put together the Northwoods Track Club, and one of the guys was David Lowe from Proctor, and he went on to UMD. But he and I had to take a car down to Tampa, Florida for somebody, and we ended up running the Gasparilla Distance Classic 15K. Which was I don't know how big it is now, but it was a huge race back then. And I remember, doing my warm-ups, and there was Greta Weitz and Bill Rogers. And it was just like, oh, this is kind of cool. I kind of like this. This is kind of fun. And that was one of the ones where it was a lot of fun to run around Tampa. And then I was affiliated with, being in Grandma's Marathon with a race director and executive director, I was able to run a couple other races. I remember one year, we ran the Rock and Roll Phoenix half marathon. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of fun. And being that we were going to go to Phoenix, my wife and I would train on treadmills, and we wanted to get acclimated to the temperature that we were going to hit in Phoenix. So, I was always running, maybe wearing extra clothes so I could anticipate 70 degree weather and all that kind of stuff. Well, it ended up being that the first day it was 50 when we got there, and then when we actually ran the race, it was in the 30s. And that one is so huge that my wife was, I was in wave one and she was in wave 30, and she was about frozen to death by the time she finally got going. So that was kind of fun. And then that particular race, short little story there, I was running. I wasn't in the best shape of anything, but I was running. And all of a sudden this guy passes me and I went, oh, okay, that's fine. I don't care. He hauls off to the side of the race course, pulls off his artificial leg, wipes off his stump, puts his artificial leg back on, and he passes me again. He did it like two or three times. I'm going, I have no reason to quit here because this guy, he's persevering any kinds of things that he's got. And it's just like, away we go.
Wow.
It was a big lesson to me that you got to keep going no matter what kind of thing you have happen to you.
Yeah. That's a great story.
I'm kind of curious, John. I mean, where did you grow up and how did you start running? What's the beginning for you?
Well, you know, I graduated from Hermantown in 1971 and I entered the military. I was in the United States Navy Air Force and they stationed me in Naples, Italy. And that's where when I had my physical for going to UMD, they listed me as moderately obese, my general physical condition, which I didn't like. So then I decided to start running and dieting, and I lost about 75 pounds. And that's where I started my love of running. And then it just, as I got back to Duluth in 1973, I just continued on and kept going. And I found it was a lot of fun to do a lot of races. I did races, you know, Ashland Bay Days. Used to be a race in Bayfield. Esco had, you know, before the Kristen Burkhalter race, there was another race that was a 5-miler in Esco. In fact, that was a kind of a funny story. We were running the race. It was like a midweek race.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were going, the gentleman, and I lay no blame on anybody, but he took a wrong turn. Uh-huh. So all of us that were in the first 10 or so broke the world record for 5 miles. I think the winner ran like a 17, 18 minute 5-miler, which is pretty unheard of. So, you know, that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun doing that kind of stuff. And I run races in Hayward. It was just fun to kind of bounce around. One of my favorites, and I don't know if they still run it. Maybe they do, the Hoghead in Proctor. And that was one that had a couple of big hills. I know one was called Little Mo toward the end of the race. And I remember going there. And when I got to the race, he always kind of looked around who was going to be there. And whenever Dan Conway, may he rest in peace as well, came, you just go, there's the winner. And Dan was an exceptional, exceptional runner. And I remember one time we ran the Hoghead. And I look and I go, that guy looks a little familiar, like I've seen him in paper. Well, he brought Richard Wilde, who had just run Grandma's Marathon. So Dan and Richard were kind of like the front runners. And it's just like, well, they're a lot older than me. I should be able to beat them. I'm wrong.
So what was the running scene in Duluth like back then, right? When you got back from Italy, being in the military and, you know, trying to continue on your running path. What were you stepping into when you got back and what was it like back then?
Well, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, there were a lot of people that were really super dedicated to their running. And in fact, I was going through some race results yesterday that I kept. And I looked, and for example, I mentioned earlier about the running scene has kind of changed. Now it's more staying healthy, recreational versus the way we used to do it back then. And neither one of them is right or wrong. But I looked at the race results for the Park Point 5-miler from when I ran it, and the top 25 runners that placed were all under 29 minutes. And I wasn't in the top 25. My time was 28:44. And it's just like, and I looked at the results for the last Park Point 5-miler in 2019, and there was 5 under 29.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot difference of, you know, what we used to, how we used to train. And I think everybody kind of spurred each other on. I mean, I would see Jess Koski and Jay Lee and I'm going to try to get as fast as they are. And, you know, the only way you could do that in my mind was to get on the track and do those kinds of workouts. One of my killer workouts was, I lived on East 8th Street, and I would run up to UMD, and then I would turn around, run down to Park Point, run back up to UMD, and then I would do 2 miles of intervals. And, that's the only way I thought I could get better. And as you guys all know, that one of the hardest parts about running, you can get physically so far, but mentally, you've got to really be there. And you just can't have the quit attitude. And back then, it was all of us were always spurring each other on. We had training runs, a lot of great training runs with Joe Kleiman and Tom Andrew and Bill Haugen and Bob Topte and Scotty Harrison. And we would just push each other. And that was kind of like the way we always did things. And it was just fun.
So what do you think has changed over time? I mean, just with the speed and the number of people, you know, putting up really good times. I mean, do you think there are more or less runners in the Duluth area now, or is it just kind of a shift in mentality from, recreation? Or what have you seen throughout the years in terms of that aspect? You know, why aren't 25 people going under 30 anymore, you know?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is there's more activities for people to do, more distractions. Mm-hmm. And, you have people that have kids and they're playing soccer and they're playing Little League baseball, and you're kind of pulled all kinds of different ways, and you don't really have the time to go out and do the serious training. And there are still some that do the serious training. I see you guys out there all the time, and Hippinen, he's always out there pounding the pavement. So there are those that continue to do that, but there are so many distractions and so many other things that people value in life now, which is fine. You have to have a balance in life. And I think I probably way back when wasn't balanced. Running was my thing. And that was the only thing that really mattered a lot of times. You know, I was terrible at diet. My big thing was Coke and Snickers. You know, I'd go out for a run and have a Coke and Snickers before. And I was set to roll.
Yeah.
But so I see that. People probably are more balanced in life, which is probably better. I like the health and the nutritional aspect that a lot of people are putting forth nowadays. I was terrible at my diet, and I still am. And that, unfortunately, is one thing that I can't blame my mother, but, you know, she always made the food, and I just kept on eating it.
So I'm kind of curious too, talking about training plans, you know, and the training methodology, because I feel like in the 70s and 80s, there was this kind of mentality of, just keep pushing your body to its breaking point, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I can remember when I would set up my schedule of running for the year. And most of my years when I was really in peak condition, I was doing over 3,000 miles a year. And I would do probably on a Saturday a 20 to 24 miler. And then probably Wednesday, I would do anywhere from 12 to 16. And they were all tempo runs, probably at that point in time, maybe 6:30 per mile as I was training. And then I would try to do some interval workout every now and then, or fartlek workouts. You know, I try to break things as I was doing it, but it was a lot of strain in your body. And I sometimes would come back after a midweek 16 miler and go, I'm pooped. And I remember one time it was kind of unique back when, way back when grandma's, Cape Bob Rich did a lot of good for Grandma's Marathon. He would broadcast the event, and then there was a couple of radio stations that actually somehow, I don't know how they got my name, but they said, can we bike along with you while you do one of your training runs for Grandma's? And I said, sure. And so it was like I was out for a 20 miler on probably a Wednesday or Thursday. It was kind of a day like today. It was kind of cloudy. And I was tooling around like 6:20s, 6:30s, and they just stayed with me the whole time, asking me lots of questions, which is, as you guys know, it's kind of hard when you're running that pace to talk.
Yeah.
But you know, he wanted to know a lot of the same things. You know, what's your training methodology? You know, how are you doing this? And what I've done some of this, and, you know, Tony does a great job, and probably you too, Michael, about training runners in the local area. I've done that for, like, just individuals, four or five different individuals over the years, and, you know, building a program for them. And I always ask them, what's their goal? And same with when I built my training program. I know, what was my goal? My goal was to be qualify for Boston. And when back in the day, there was only two qualifying times for Boston. There was sub 250 for the guys, sub 320 for the women. And and the only way to get there was to really put in the miles and put in the time, and as far as I was concerned. So I got close 1 year, I think, down at Twin Cities. I ran a 251, and, you know, I was doing fine. I was running with Tom Andrew, and we hit the first mile at 555, and I went, I think we're kind of screwed here. but we just kept on going on, and when I hit mile 20, I was still doing okay, but I could tell something was different in my body. I was getting hypoglycemic, and I tried to look at my time on my watch, and all I could see was it was all cloudy in the center of my watch.
No.
I could see everything else in the peripheral, but I couldn't. It was all cloudy in front of me. And so I slowed down a little bit. I think mile 15, we ran another 555. But as we got to the finish line, I knew I was kind of, that was it. I wasn't going to make it. And I got to the finish line, and the doctor, you know, when I walked past him, he told the nurse, stay with this guy. They knew I was in a little bit of distress. And as I walked through the chute, I drank some water. And then I looked at her and I go, are you single? She goes, you're feeling better. I go, yeah, I am. So then I just walked off. But that was kind of fun. But again, it's the goals. And that's when, you know, Tony probably does that. One of his training groups is the same thing, Mike. And it's just like, what's your goal? What do you want to do? Yeah. And some of the athletes that I have trained over the years, I've said, what is your goal? What do you want to do? And one of my proudest moments was I was training a lady from Roseau, and she wanted to break 140 for the half. Mm-hmm. So I set up a program for her, and she followed it all the way. And one of my proudest moments was she came across the finish line, and I saw her, and she looked at her watch. She goes, I did it. She ran like 139.30 or something like that. So she was just ecstatic, which is kind of fun. It's kind of rewarding to see that kind of performance and know that you had part in it, and the people have to do the work, and you're just there kind of coaxing them along. So that was a lot of fun.
John, I'm curious, with your with the training that you did, how did you get your knowledge? This is pre-internet days for our young listeners who don't, you know, that's a shock to them that it was world before the internet. But so were you reading books? Were you just getting knowledge from other runners, other friends who were training as well? Or how did you get the knowledge?
And pretty much most of it was from other runners and talking to them and how they did their training. I think George Sheehan had a book that I looked at a little bit. But most of it was just firsthand knowledge talking to different people. Over the years, I became friends with Dick Beardsley. And we would have conversations back and forth, and it was always fun to talk to Dick because, you know, one of the things that I've learned over the years, and for the younger runners, this might be or new to the sport, running is a relative sport. You know, one of the things I've always told people is you cannot go out and play golf with Tiger Woods, but you can go out and run a race with Dick Beardsley, Meb, any of these people. It's just all relative. And I remember one time having a conversation. We had finished the half marathon, and Dick was there. And he walked up to somebody and said, well, how did you feel at mile 19? You know, it's like, well, this is the way I felt, and this is the way – how'd you feel? So it's all relative, which was kind of a nice way for Dick to put it. You know, it's like everybody has their own goals, and when you get there – you all are relative, you know, feeling different at different points. But, you know, basically at mile 19, we all feel pretty much the same. You know, he might be going faster than us, but, you know, that was always fun. And then I thought about that was that one day I was running the marathon with Felix Humphreys. And I don't know if anybody, probably the younger people, don't even know who Felix Humphreys was. He was a weather broadcaster from KBJR, ran barefoot. And he was very recognizable, very nice African-American man who was very tall. But people would just see him and they're just like, yay, Felix is coming by. Yay, let's clap for him. So I just kept on as long as I could with him because, as you guys get accolades, you kind of thrive off of their positive energy. And that same race, I was at mile 16 of the marathon and Dick Beardsley was off to the side. He had run it as a training run for maybe only – I think the coach only wanted him to run like 15. So he's off to the side. He's clapping it. Hey, John, how's it going? So that was always a kind of a pump up. But a lot of the knowledge I got was just firsthand knowledge from other people and just asking what you did or seeing what they did in their training routines. So,
yeah.
Cool.
I'm kind of curious. This just struck me. Okay. Back then, let's say in the 70s and 80s, I mean, there's a lot of competition locally, even the small races, just stacked fields compared to what was going on today. I mean, how closely did people keep their training techniques? Was there that aspect of competitiveness where it's like, I don't want to tell you the workout I did last week, or was it kind of open book sharing
notes? It was pretty much open book. The North Shore Striders were big back then. And I was Scott Keenan always said that I was the last president of the old North Shore Striders, and I killed it. So he's always said that. But you get together as the Striders, and you can share information. One of the nice things I've always known about the running community is everybody's very positive and open and willing to share. I mean, I remember way back when I was at the Rock and Roll Phoenix, and I walked up to Carrie Tollefson, Olympian, and started talking to her, and she was so positive, and I've met her many times over the years, and it's always let's get after it, and more than willing to find out how you're doing and then also sharing information back and forth. So Dick Beardsley was another example, very, very positive guy. How can I help you? What do you need? That kind of stuff.
Very cool. I love hearing some of the older names of guys who are running in Duluth. A lot of them that you just mentioned, I hadn't heard of. We've had Jess Koski on. I've heard the name Jay Lee, and we've had Jaro on. But it's really cool to hear some of these other names, too. I really enjoy that stuff. Let's talk a little bit, John, about your work at Grandma's and the stuff, how long you were there and the stuff that you did at Grandma's Marathon.
Okay. It started when I was at Minnesota Power. I was on the hospitality committee and with Grandma's Marathon, which was very, very rewarding. And I got to meet a lot of elite runners. In fact, my wife and I hosted some runners. Probably one of the more unique runners that we ever had was Elena Plastanina from the Soviet Union Belarus or whatever it was. And she was very, very unique. She had won the race before, and very demanding. And at the same time, we had Elena Plastanina, and I don't remember the other lady's last name, but she was also an Elena. And at that point in time, we had just had a child, and they were all kind of all my wife and those two were always talking about the language barrier was there, but they could always talk about crying babies and that kind of stuff. So that was. That was kind of fun. And Elena was different from the standpoint that my wife was running the half marathon on that morning, and I was obviously working on the race. So I had to leave the house at 3 o'clock in the morning. And Elena was very demanding. I want espresso coffee made now. So it's just like, okay, well, I'll make that. When I had to take her to the airport, as I was still part of the hospitality committee as well, she wanted to stop at the Miller Hill Mall. Had to have donuts, as many donuts as she could possibly fit in her luggage. So that was, I started at Minnesota Power working on the hospitality committee. And then after that, back in 2003, I think that's right. I can't remember the year. Anyway, I was on the board of directors for Grandma's Marathon. And, I know at one time there was an opening, and Scott was the executive director. There was no race director. The assistant race director had just left to go on to pursue another career, And so I walked into Scott's office after the board meeting, shut the door, and I said, are you going to fill this position? And he goes, yes. And he goes, I said, do you want to hire me? He says, you're hired. So I wasn't quite 50 years old yet. So I had to wait. I said, you know, when I hit 50 in June of 2003, then I can come on board, because then I hit the magic age to retire at Minnesota Power. So at 2003, then I started as it's kind of a gradual progression, a support service coordinator. Then I was the assistant race director. Then I was the race director. And then I finally retired as executive director. So that was my progression up the ladder at Grandma's Marathon. And it's always been fun to, they still have me come back to help out with the whippersnapper races, which is one of the things I'm very proud of, because we had it grow to where it is nowadays with all the mascots. Obviously in 2021, we can't have the mascots going forward, but we built a relationship with the Minnesota Vikings, and they've always been good at coming up. Victor the Viking and the cheerleaders come up, and that was one of the proud moments back then. And we also started, I remember Bob Gustafson, who was our PR director, and I met with Josh Berlow, who's the athletic director at UMD. And we came up with an idea about having kids races, not only the Wednesday night, the races, but we wanted to start a program for the kids in the winter. So the very first one we tried was kind of an experimental, but Josh said, let's do it. So we did it up at the UMD Fieldhouse. And since I've gone from there, Shane and the crew have done a great job of adding St. Scholastica and UWS to the Saturday morning at the races. But it all started one time when Bob Gustafson, Josh Berlow, and I met at Blackwoods, and we start talking about let's see if we can do something for the kids, which has been a lot of fun. And another thing that, you know, you talk about Grandma's Marathon, you know, Dick held the record for so many years. And I was lucky enough to be the executive director when Dominic Andoro broke the record. And I remember being at the finish line. Dick was there. I was there. We all had tears in our eyes, because it was like that record stood for a long, long time. And that was a lot of fun. And, you know, I credit Sarah Culver, who is the elite athlete coordinator or manager for Grandma's Marathon. She has always been so, so good at getting the right elite athletes to come. And, you know, I give her a lot of credit. I remember her saying to me at when Dominic broke the record, she goes, you know, he did it. He did it. I says, yep, thanks to you. So that was a great, you know, great thing to be, you know. And then another thing at Grandma's Marathon that I thought was a lot of fun was the Minnesota Mile. You know, I don't think everybody always thought that the Minnesota Mile was a great one to have, because it was one of those races, in my mind, it rounded out the field of all the different events that we had. You know, we had a marathon, we had a 5K, we had, you know, the 4K, we had the 5-miler, you know, the half marathon, all those things. But the Minnesota Mile was a very unique thing. And I remember Sarah did a great job. But one year, I don't remember if it was 4 or 5, but we had all of those guys breaking the 4-minute mile, which I was at the finish line. And it was just so fun to see, you know, all those athletes coming in under 4 minutes. And it's just like, wow. But then you also had the citizen runners, which was great. The race kept getting bigger and bigger. Now it's more of a recreational race up at Enskonen Parkway, which is great. A great venue up there. Shane and Greg Coppola have done a great job of getting that one organized. Great scenery up there. I've not been able to partake in that race. My body's getting older. And I'm into power walking now. It's a lot easier on my legs. And but that was great. You know, that was, I loved doing that kind of stuff. I loved being part of Grandma's Marathon. What I've been fortunate to do with the marathon is I've met so many wonderful people through the affiliation of Grandma's Marathon. And Grandma's Marathon has a lot of great ambassadors. You know, Dick Beardsley's one, Gary Bjorklund, Doug Curtis. Doug Curtis is a huge ambassador. And one time I went to a conference down in San Diego, and I remember running. They always had morning runs, and it was always fun to run with Doug Curtis. And Doug and I always give each other a hard time, because he always wears a hat and I always wear a hat. It's my good luck hat that I always wear for every event. So that way we don't have any problems with the weather.
So it's so funny, John, that you just mentioned that, because that's what I was going to ask you. Whenever I see an image of John Carlson at a race, being a race director, helping out with the race, there's always the hat. And that was what I was going to ask next, is what is the deal with the hat?
Yeah, I picked up the hat. We did a trip out to San Francisco one year, and I bought the hat, and I went, this is going to be my lucky hat. And people said, nice cowboy hat. And I go, it's not a cowboy hat. It's the Indiana Jones hat.
That's right.
And I wear it for every event. And I remember one year, first year I was executive director at Grandma's Marathon, the weather reports were just ominous. And I kept having people call me, when are you going to cancel the race? When are you going to cancel the race? I go, I'm not going to cancel the race. And in fact, I had somebody after the race was over, and we didn't never cancel it. It rained a little bit, but they sent me a screenshot of their phone, the radar, and all around a circle, there was a circle of nothing but light rain, and everything else was all thunderstorms and et cetera. And I liken it to wearing the hat.
The hat.
In fact, now, you know, I've done it, you know, I work part-time for the Duluth Air Show, and I wear that all the time. And when I did the Runway 4K and the Oktoberfest, I always wear a hat. But I was told that when I die and am gone, that hat has to be willed to the Duluth Air Show. So, no, I always wear that, wear the hat, and it's always kind of fun to be. It's kind of like people, you know, so why do you wear the hat? Well, it's two reasons. One is for the weather, and the second is recognizable. Where's John? And you can just look for the hat, and then that's where I am.
So what was the transition, John, between, you know, being a very passionate runner and racer yourself to more of the race director, you know, production side, I'll say? I mean, how did that transition happen?
You kind of broke up, so I didn't hear the first part of the question.
How was the transition between, you know, being a passionate runner and a passionate racer yourself to, you know, actually more on the production side, I'll say, as a race director and such?
Well, yeah, that's thanks for the question. You know, for those of us that have done races like you guys have, you don't understand how much there is to putting on a race until you've actually done one. And mm-hmm. I was lucky probably in the 80s, I got involved in some of the races. The Hermantown Summerfest put on a 5-miler. Now it's a 5K. But I remember going up to Skyline Bowling mm-hmm. Alley and telling them that we want to put on a 5-miler in conjunction with the Hermantown Summerfest. Can we use the bowling alley as the start and finish line? So I had some knowledge there. And then I also transitioned the Park Point 5-miler at one time was put on by the Duluth News Tribune. And they wanted to get out of it, so then I kind of took it over and did the race. And what I tried to do with that race is back then, you know, everything was spindles, and some of the smaller races now still do the spindles for timing. But what I tried to do was try to get some computer timing results. You know, we still use the spindles, but I had some people that I worked with at Minnesota Power that were programmers that all of a sudden the old small little Apple cube computers, they would transition the results from the spindles into the Apple. And we were able to send out postcards. So I had some knowledge of how to put on some races by going and physically watching, but then some of it was just like, I think I can do this, and I try to organize it. And maybe way back when, probably didn't do as much with police permits and stuff like that, but probably violated some rules here and there. But I kind of transitioned into doing it from what I learned from running races and then talking to other people about how to do it. It's been a lot of fun. I've had another, you know, with that, the knowledge that I've gained from that, I've helped out some other races. I was a consultant. See if I can remember the names. I want to make sure I get this right. The Quad Cities Courage 5K up on the range. You know, mm-hmm. they were thinking about putting it on, and they wanted to see if you know, somebody would be willing to help them. So I said, yeah, you know, just I would drive up there probably every 2 weeks and give them some advice on how to put on a race and what you had to look for. And it worked out pretty well because they were able to get some good sponsorship. And at the same time, they were put on a very good race the first time out of the chute, which is, as we all know, that if you don't put it on the first time correctly, you're not going to get the repeat business. And that's always a big factor with putting on race directing. And one of the things that, you know, has changed a lot since we first started running way back when in the 70s and 80s is a lot of times you just kind of finished the race and that was it. And now it's about what's the swag? What am I going to get for my dollars? And I just did my wife and I did a virtual Chicago Shamrock Shuffle run. And it's just like, oh, for my entry fee, I got a hat, I got a huge medal, I got a, you know, a zipped up jacket. And it's just like, wow, it's a lot. Same thing with Mary Anderson puts on a lot of Chocoholic races. And same thing, it's about what is the swag. So that has changed a lot from, you know, what it was way back when. You know, then it was just, you got a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it was a one color white t-shirt a lot of times, which was fine. I didn't, all of us have thrown away so many t-shirts over the years and just kept the ones that were, you know, important to us. My wife still wears my Boston Marathon shirt that I finisher shirt that I got. So
I'm curious too, what you've seen in terms of races coming and going. I know, John, earlier on, you mentioned some of your favorite races and of course new races pop up. I mean, what have you seen kind of being so involved in the Duluth running world in terms of just the races available throughout Duluth throughout the last, you know, 30 years or so?
You know, they're probably less predominant than they were back then. I think there's a lot more things that you have to really plan for. You got to work with, and the Duluth Police Department is just great to work with. Skip Stovern and Tom just retired. They're just awesome to work with. I've known Mike Tuscan, the chief of police, for many, many years, and they are great to work with, but you have to get in and start getting involved in permitting. Mm-hmm. And you have to worry about insurance. And then you have to worry about making sure you have medical coverage and getting sponsorship dollars. And then are you going to have t-shirts? Are you going to have numbers? Are you going to do timing, or are you going to do chip timing, or are you going to do just spindles? And, you know, there, you have to have everything lined up. So I think a lot of people, once they've got into the race directing, have found it is a lot harder than just saying, here's a track, we're going to run this, here's a whistle, we're going to say go. And that's it's a lot more than that. And there's a lot of risk too. I mean, you never know. One of the hardest things that we all know is ordering t-shirts and medals. Mm-hmm. You can never get it right. And if you don't get it right or close to it, then you get people that are upset about it and they don't want to come back. And then word of mouth passes along. I ran this race, but they didn't have my t-shirt size. Well, what size did you order? Well, I ordered this, but I didn't want that. And it's like, well, you know, so you're always dealing with that. And then, you know, Dave McGilvery, the race director for the Boston Marathon, he and I've had conversations over the years. And, you know, one of the other issues is porta potties. You could have a porta potty for every registered runner and they still would complain that wasn't enough. And so you're always dealing with those types of things. And I think as the years have progressed, it's just been a lot harder for people to want to put in the time and effort it takes to actually put on a quality race. And that's why I think that you've probably seen less and less of that. I know the lady from the Christian Burkhalter has done a great job. In fact, she's helped us when I did the Runway 4K race directing that. You know, she was there to help out, and, you know, any kind of suggestions, I would, you know, welcome them from her and any other race director. You know, I've been lucky to meet a lot of race directors from all over the country. Dave McGilvery, Peter Chachi, who is he's the retired New York Marathon thing race director, and Mike Nishi, the executive vice president for Chicago Marathon, and Virginia Brophy Ackman down at Twin Cities, and Brian Nastel, who does the Madeline Island Marathon, Sean Ryan, who's done Green Bay, and then also he's in charge of the Fall 50. And you know, they all say the same thing. It's just harder and harder to put on races. And you think about Grandma's Marathon, for example. You're going from Two Harbors down Duluth, but you think about you got Lake County, you've got, you know, St. Louis County, you got the city of Duluth, you got the city of, you know, Two Harbors, and you got to work with all those entities. You're also working with Minnesota Highway Patrol. You've got all those different aspects you have to really think about. And, you know, and when we had the bombing at Boston Marathon, that has put a new wrinkle into a lot of things. And I remember after the bombing in Boston, we didn't have that much time for Grandma's to start. I mean, mm-hmm. It was only like 2 months away. And I remember all of us took a bus ride with Lieutenant Risch and a bunch of other DPD people and St. Louis County sheriffs, and going up, and how are we going to take care of this course when it's 26 miles long and we don't know where a threat could be. And, mm-hmm. you know, so a lot of people had to build in protocols for that. And that's probably, you know, shorter races isn't as much of a problem, but you still think about a Fitker's 5K where you got a couple thousand people. Park Point, same thing. You're still getting 1,000 people in a closed area, and you have to be conscious of how you're going to take care of those people and have emergency procedures and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think way back when, maybe either people forgot about all the requirements that you had to do or didn't contact police and that kind of thing, or you know, you start seeing, you know, some of the races die off only because of sponsorship too. You know, right. I always loved the Bridgman's 5-miler, but you know, dollars become short, and it's tough to get sponsorships for a lot of these races, and you can't always rely on entry fees because you got to keep them down so people can actually afford to run your race. Right. But you have to supplement that with sponsorship dollars, which sometimes as you get closer to the 2000s and 21, you know, nowadays it's hard to get sponsorship dollars.
Especially you mentioned a lot of challenges for race directors, and it's becoming more and more difficult. But we didn't even touch on maybe one of the biggest wrinkles in putting on races since ever, which is the pandemic. How do you see races coming back with COVID and more vaccines rolling out? What do you think the future looks like in the next several months or the next couple of years, John?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot more races that are going to happen. I know last year, Grandma's has done a great job. Greg Hoppala and Shane have done a great job of spacing out things. I know when they did the Park Point 5-miler last year, they ran it in waves. When we did the Runway 4K last year, we did the same thing. We would space out people at 6 foot. But as more and more people become vaccinated, I think we're seeing that states are lifting some of the restrictions on the number of people that can be in races. People are feeling a little more comfortable when they're had both vaccines. I know Mary Anderson does a lot of races around the state, and also she just did one in South Dakota. I think there are more and more people that are okay with running the races. They would just as soon get out and start doing races. I think people are still going to have the requirement of when you get to the start line, you will wear a mask up until the time you get ready to go, and then you can take it off. And then as soon as you get done with the race, then you got to put it back on. One of the things that I see is going to be a transitional thing, and I don't know this for a fact, but you know, the celebrations afterwards, it's going to be hard to have people congregate in groups to maybe commiserate and talk about the race and have their, you know, their beer or refreshments or whatever after the race. And there are only certain places where you can really spread out people. I think of some races that have maybe ended at like East High School or you have a place where you can have a big, huge area where you can keep people kind of separated, but at the same time be able to enjoy the post-race camaraderie that happens. I know when we did the Runway 4K last year, we had tables lined up with all the refreshments. And basically, as soon as you were done, you grabbed what you wanted and out the door you went. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that's going to ease up here. You know, the governor raised some of the limitations now, like to 10,000 oral. There's also a capacity percentage limit that you have to look at. So I can see some of the smaller races. I just did some research yesterday or the day before on the Hope Springs. I think they're canceled, which is unfortunate because that raised money for kids with cancer. And I always enjoyed that race because it finished in the Hibbing hockey rink. And I always enjoyed working up with that race. But I can see some races that are just saying, we don't want to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate. I know Grandma's has done a great job. Hopla and Chain have, I think, I forget what the name of the company is, but they've contracted with somebody to work on the spacing as the runners go for the marathon. And it should be interesting. I'm working the finish line this year, and obviously I'll have a mask and gloves on and all those types of things, and that's the proper protocol. And it'll be fun to see people actually in crowds again going past the finish line. But what's going to be on the sidelines, I don't know if there'll even be much of a crowd there on the sidelines.
Right.
Hard.
Yeah, it's hard to say, I think. And I think, just like you mentioned, John, you know, can't put the cart before the horse. I think the restrictions from the state or national levels maybe have to come first, right? And then that kind of dictates. But I'm hopeful that what Grandma's is doing, you know, because they have the resources to hire on specialists. And I'm hoping that that can kind of create a template that can be scaled down to more of the local, you know, if you will, small mom and pop races that, you know, may not be considering even coming back at all. So hopefully that template can be shared and useful. I don't know.
Yeah. And a lot of these smaller races are fundraisers. And without having, you know, being able to put on the race, they're not be able to support some of the local organizations that really need the funding, especially in the COVID times. And that's unfortunate, but it's just the way the world is right now. And again, that's where sponsorship dollars can come in, but you never know. I've had both my shots, and I'll continue to wear a mask wherever I go. And if I do some speed walking races, I'll continue to follow exactly what they, you know, require. Just the mask off when I'm doing the race and then put it back on when I'm done.
Well, hopefully, by the time maybe late 2021 rolls around, things are really close to normal, and 2022 for sure, they're backed away pre-pandemic. That would be great. What do you have, John, coming up in the next, I don't know, the rest of this running season?
Well, you know, I'll do some virtual races. I know Grandma's, I've talked to Greg Hopla. I'll be working the finish line at the Irvine 5K. I'll be working the finish line at Grandma's Marathon. And then we're going to be doing the whippersnapper races as well. They'll be a little bit different than they have been in the past. But, you know, there's not going to be, my understanding is just going to be more freeform, where you come in whenever you want to come in, and then you run your distance, and then grab your swag, and then out you go, type of a deal. So I'll be doing that. And I don't know if I'll be working Chicago this year. I worked the finish line at Chicago Marathon, or the start line at Chicago Marathon, and that is just a hoot. And you get 40,000 runners off the starting line.
Yeah.
And I remember the last year that we worked it, it was took an hour and 40 minutes.
Wow.
From the time the first one left till the last one. And about a half hour after the last one left, the start line was completely cleaned.
Wow.
You know, Chicago Public Works was there with the sweepers, and we had so many volunteers that were cleaning up stuff, and that was just amazing. But I doubt that I'll be going back there. I usually work the Madeline Island half and full marathons, and they've already canceled for this year, so I won't be doing that, which is kind of unfortunate. And I work the Fall 50, which is up in Door County. And I don't know if they're going to have that or not, but I kind of doubt that I'll be, you know, Sean Ryan's a great host up there, and I don't know if they'll need my services this year, which is fine. You know, it's a beautiful area up there. That is one of those races where they, as soon as they list it, it sells out almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the draw. In fact, Brian Mastel and Sean Ryan wanted to do one in Duluth. They wanted to do one that started up probably up by Grand Marais, kind of like the old Edmund Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm.
And we had done some, they had come and visited me a couple times talking about how we want to do this. And it just at that point in time didn't make sense to try to do that. So nothing there. And then the Hope Springs, I'd helped out there, and that's not going to happen. A lot of events that with Pinky Swear. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Pinky Swear. It's an organization that the short story is that a young man, I forget how old he was, but he was dying of cancer. And he was in the hospital, and he asked his dad, how much money do I have in my savings account? And he told him how much it was. And he said, well, just can you pull it out and $100 bills, please? So what he did with those $100 bills is he walked around all the hospital rooms and gave each kid $100 and said, Merry Christmas. And he looked at his dad and said, you know, this makes me feel so good. Can you pinky swear me that going forward after I'm gone, you'll continue to do this? And that formed the Pinky Swear Foundation. And I did races in Minneapolis, Omaha, Kansas City for the Pinky Swear Foundation. So I believe they're still going on. I'm not involved with that anymore, but it was, you know, those were a lot of fun seeing these kids that don't have a long life expectancy, but they just have positive attitudes. And all these other kids are running triathlons and helping to support and raising money for these kids. It was just a great thing. I remember when we did Kansas City, the start and finish line was between Arrowhead Stadium and Royal Stadium. So that was kind of cool. And actually the race actually went into Arrowhead Stadium, and that was kind of fun. So, but I won't be doing that this year. So it's kind of limited with COVID. It kind of canceled a lot of races, but you know, the grandma's ones are still on, and I'll be going with that.
Cool. Well, John, we really appreciate you coming on to the podcast and talking a little bit about the history of Duluth. I personally just love hearing these stories of the older guys who are out there doing that, just kind of pounding the pavement. It really takes me back to some of the mentors that I had when I was growing up. And so thank you for coming on and sharing your stories with us.
No problem. I appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity for me to ramble and ramble and ramble and ramble.
No, that's the best part. We love the rambling.
We could probably go for another 2 hours, I think, on one specific topic even. So, yeah.
It's like, you know, I took so many. It was kind of like walking down memory lane, and I pulled out my bag of all my medals. And I go, yeah. I looked at the back of some of these. I went, oh, I got second place. I got third place. How'd I do that? I posted one result yesterday. It was from the Lantern Supper Club. It was a 20K and also a 5 miler. And I looked at the results, and Tim Stradiotti won the race, and I was second, 8.5 minutes behind him. But then Kevin Pates was a little bit behind me, so I had to give Kevin a little dig. I said, I finally beat Kevin Pates. He's in Arizona, so he chimed in almost right away, so that was kind of fun. But it was fun to reminisce about all the different races, you know, some of the times that I ran. You know, grandma's was 2:45 was my best, and I ran, you know, 5 milers in 28 minutes. I'm going, god, I could have probably been a lot faster if I would have trained properly, because way back when I wasn't doing a lot of intervals. But I was, you know, if I'd done more, it was fun. And I've been blessed to meet a lot of great people, from Olympians. Like I was at I met Meb a couple times, and I was walking. I was at I'm sorry for rambling, but this was a kind of a fun story. I was at a road race running conference, and I walked up to this table, and I said, you know that guy right over there? And they go, no, who is that? I said, that's Dan O'Brien. He just won the Olympic decathlon gold medal. Oh, wow. So that was kind of fun to reminisce about all the different things I've been blessed with meeting and seeing all these people.
Yeah, cool. Well, we wish you the best on the rest of the season, John, and hopefully, you know, you're able to keep that power walking going and
yep. get
a chance to help out with some more races too.
Yep. And we'll see you around the neighborhood, Tony.
That's right. Yep.
Between you and Jaro, I see all you guys all the time.
Yeah.
All right. Nice to see you, Mike. Nice to see you. Nice to chat with all you guys.
All right. Thanks, John.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. And that wraps up the latest issue or episode of the Duluth Rundown podcast. I want to thank John Carlson for joining us for the interview section. That was a lot of fun. Really cool to hear some of the stories that John had. And like we mentioned, I mean, that we could go in more and more with the stories he has. It's just, to me, that's just awesome to hear. Big thanks to our sponsor, Austin Jaro, continues to support the podcast. And a big thanks to our listeners who also continue to support the podcast. It's great to hear from everybody. And if you're a listener and you haven't subscribed yet, do subscribe. That way you automatically get the updates when the new episodes launch. Hopefully everybody is subscribing. And give us a good review, too, on iTunes. Nice. Yeah. Mike, you got anything else for the closing?
I think that covers it all. And, yeah, see everyone out there.